chickens in the houses, and they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the Mottawog, the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
And while you were expecting Michelle Anna Jordan, she is evidently stuck in traffic or trying to find a parking space outside the KRCB studios right now because of the number of volunteers we have here supporting the television auction, which I mentioned just a little bit ago. Anyway, I don't know anything about the farmers markets this week, so we'll have to wait till Michelle gets here to get that report. Who we've got in the studio is Rex Williams of Williams Ranches Lamb and Ryan Wren of the Sonoma Meat Company. And welcome to both of you.
Well, thank you. It's going to be good to be here.
Absolutely.
And this is going to be a lot more freeform than Michelle normally does. So I guess maybe, Rex, why don't you start and just give us a little intro of who you are and how you came to Sonoma County and what you do.
Well, I'm fourth generation Sonoma County, born in downtown Petaluma. My wife and I are first generation sheep herders. We started when we got out of school. We actually were working for a gentleman by the name of Bruce Campbell, who most of you will remember as CK Lamb. And he was the first individual to direct market lamb directly from the pasture to the restaurant. And learned an awful lot from that guy. And he's no longer with us. We miss him a lot, but we've kind of tried to take up where he left off, and we're direct marketing all of our lamb right now. Our biggest customer, our only customer, is Ryan and Janine over at Sonoma County Meat Company, and so they are exclusive purveyors of Williams Ranch's lamb.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Ryan, how about a little bit about how you got involved and what you're doing?
So, Janine and myself own Sonoma County Meat Company. It's in Santa Rosa. It's a USDA-inspected meat processing facility. We do meat processing.
She slides into first.
We do meat processing for local farmers and ranchers. We also... Welcome.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh my, I had another event for which I made a lot of food.
Awesome.
And afterwards I went home and took a nap, and my grandson didn't wake me up when he was supposed to. So I think I made it here in like 9.5 minutes, and I have no sound on my headphones, but who am I to complain? It is Rex Williams and Ryan Rin.
Yes, Ryan.
Ryan Rin. I knew that. Let's see. Do I have anything going on in my headphones? I don't think I do. Okay. Okay. No, nothing.
Nothing there either.
Nothing there either.
Okay. Well, we'll work on that.
But we're on the air?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Okay. So, we have Rex Williams of Williams Ranches, who you have just the most amazing lamb.
Well, thank you.
A truly amazing lamb raised on the Laguna.
Yes, yes. We have a piece we lease out there right alongside Llano Road, and it's 150 acres of the most beautiful irrigated pasture. Llano Road.
Oh, Llano Road. Okay,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And it's 150 acres of the most beautiful irrigated pasture you've ever seen.
Absolutely.
It's my favorite time of year right now because, do you hear that? That's the grass growing.
Ah.
I have spent most of today on a tractor clipping down all of the grass that the sheep don't eat. We practice a rotational grazing program. Mm-hmm. And so the sheep go into the field. They graze for 7 to 10 days in that neighborhood. Then we pull them out, and I come in with a tractor and a rotary mower, and we clip everything off. It's kind of like clearing the table after you've eaten, because you wouldn't want to come back to that same table if the food was still sitting there.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's my favorite time of year.
And I remember speaking with Bruce Campbell when I was writing about Sonoma County lamb a few years ago, and he talked about fillery.
Fillery. It's a blessing and a curse.
Oh.
It is a beautiful little purple flower, and it's really pretty, and early in the spring, in February and March, it is very high protein. It is as good a feed as clover. As you get past March, April into May, it sets seed, and when it sets seed, it gets very bitter. And the sheep don't like it.
Oh.
And then it makes this little corkscrew seed. And we've all had them in our socks, and they're annoying.
Yeah, that's fillery, the little corkscrew?
That's the little corkscrew deal. That is a fillery seed.
Okay.
And if you can only imagine wearing a wool sweater and lying down in a patch of fillery, that is what we have with the sheep, is we get the fillery stuck in the wool, and then when the shearers come in to shear, they're having to fight that fillery, and it scratches your arms, and it really is not too good for the fleece either. So like I said, it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, Bruce talked about it as a very early grass that allowed local ranchers to feed early out on the field.
Right. As the fillery is coming in, the guys out on the coast, especially, not so much us because we're in the lowlands, but the guys out on the coast, they can stop feeding hay as soon as the fillery starts coming in.
Okay, that's what it is.
Because it fills them up. Like I said, it's very high protein, high in nutrition. The ewes milk real well on it. So you can cut way back on your hay bill if you've got fillery.
Uh-huh.
But again, you've got the other side of that coin. Is that
as
it goes later in the year after it sets seed, then it becomes kind of a problem to deal with.
Sure, that makes sense. What comes in next after fillery?
Well, when you're talking about native grasses, you've got all kinds of native grasses that come in. You know, some of which we like, some of which we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not really a native, but you see it all over the place, is Italian ryegrass, and it's really good feed, and it comes on later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
If you're thinking about legumes, things that we're actually wanting the lambs to eat, you've got all kinds of different subclovers. Now, a subclover is short for subterranean clover. And a subterranean clover is a legume that actually sets its seed under the ground, so nothing can eat it. That's its defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. Is it sends a rhizome down into the ground, it sets a seed, and that seed stays there until the next year.
Oh.
and then it grows. It's an annual, but one plant can set 50-60 seeds pretty easy. we've got different kinds of subclovers. You've got an old variety of subclover called a Mount Barker, which is very common around here. It's an early subclover. Mm-hmm. Guys love to see that coming up in their pasture because, again, it's good feed. It comes on early. Some of the subclovers that we've introduced from Australia, Nungaran, Wujanella, these particular brands, they come in a little later in the mm-hmm. year. They actually developed one about 10, 12 years ago, which is called Nitro Persian Clover, and it is probably the latest version of the clover, and it really doesn't start coming on till about now.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't like to be too wet, so when things start to dry out, mm-hmm. you'll see, again, a little purple flower. It's not a white flower like the rest of the subclovers. Uh-huh. It's a little purple flower, and it's growing on the shoulders out in the pasture where it's up out of the water.
Okay. One, this may not be a question you can answer, and that's fine, but back when I was a student of English Lit, if you go to Thomas Hardy's book, Far From the Madding Crowd, one of the opening scenes is when the sheep have gotten into a field and they have a lot of gas and they're going to die. And I think that it's the, not the protagonist, I guess you'd call him the hero. He goes in and he punctures somewhere in their tummy to release the gas. What is
the
it?
The shepherd's name was Shepherd Hoke.
Okay.
And I have not read the book, but I have seen
Gabriel
several different
Gabriel was his first
movies,
name, I think. Gabriel, I think, was
movies.
His uh-huh.
And what those sheep were suffering from is what we call bloat.
Right, yeah.
And bloat is what happens when you take a sheep that is empty, it's hungry, it's not, doesn't have a full belly, and you turn it in on legumes, which are very, very, very easily digested feed. Mm-hmm. So when they get into the rumen, they start breaking down immediately. They start fermenting. When it start fermenting, they start off-gassing.
Sure.
The sheep will fill up with gas. There's just nothing, nowhere for it to go. They can't burp. And
why?
So it's got something to do with how they regurgitate.
Okay.
A lot of times when we've had sheep bloat, we run a tube down their throat and you can hear the gas come out.
Okay, and it doesn't go the other direction.
Not very easily.
Okay.
But the there's a name for the little tool he was using, and I don't remember it right now because mm-hmm. I must have been sleeping. Procar? Trocar. I was probably asleep that day in pre-vet class. You roll them over until you get the rumen pointed up, and you enter that right down at the bottom of the rib cage,
mm-hmm.
and then it lets the gas come out. It makes a small hole through the side of the belly, in through the peritoneum, into the rumen, lets the gas out. The sheep becomes more comfortable. When you pull the whole mechanism out, it's a very small hole, and it seals itself
seals
back
like
up.
Right away.
And
okay.
Very rarely do you get peritonitis where you actually get some of that liquid out of the rumen that comes in into the peritoneum.
Mm. Yeah, I've always, so I was a student of Thomas Hardy, but I always wondered about that part.
That story takes place in Dorsetshire, England, mm-hmm. which I guess absolutely makes no difference whatsoever, except for that's the kind of sheep we raise, are Dorsets.
Okay, and it always reminded me, I guess geographically you would say, always reminds me of Lakeville,
mm-hmm.
of the Lakeville area of Sonoma County.
Yep.
Yeah. Wessex County is what Thomas Hardy called it.
Yes, and it's low ground. It's where the down breeds come from, your mm-hmm. South Downs. They used to be called Dorset Downs until mm-hmm. they finally dropped down off of the name, so they were Dorset. And they actually used to have horns, some of them, so they were Dorset horns.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had your the Shropshires and some of these English breeds that are not hill sheep. They come from that area of uh-huh. England, and it's just like you say, it's all low ground out
right.
there. It's just like Lakeville. It's like where we are up on Llano.
On the Laguna.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remarkable area. Thank you for telling me. I wanted to know that forever.
I am a walking encyclopedia of useless information. That and three bucks will get you coffee.
Well, I find it useful, so thank you very much. For several years, you and Carrie were fixtures at farmers markets. But now we have the Sonoma County Meat Company.
Yes.
And I know that last October when I was one of the chefs for an event at Fort Ross, big event at Fort Ross. I was able to get enough leg of lamb for, I think it was 180 people. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do it, you know, sort of coming to you. And I was able to do it, your lamb, through Sonoma County Meat Company. So it seems to me that you're providing, Ryan, mm-hmm. a really great service.
Yes.
Not just for people, individuals, consumers, but also for the ranchers.
Yeah. Sonoma County Meat Company is basically trying to create a space for people to find locally raised meat. We provide the service of cut and wrap for farmers that want to sell at farmers markets. We also purchase and resell animals like the lambs that Rex provides us. So exclusively, we buy all the lamb that I can get from him. I'm always... Every time I see him, I say, so, got any more? I want them all, please.
Uh-huh. So you're selling well. People are finding you.
Yes.
People are wanting local
products.
Yeah,
we've been really, 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 really lucky to be supported by the community in terms of people buying local meat. It's a mm-hmm. great thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a really great thing. And it's just so nice to be able to walk into a single location mm-hmm. and know that you're getting... you know, meat that has been raised humanely and all of those other things that we want our food, you know, to have.
Yes.
And when did you open?
We're coming up on our second anniversary at the end of May.
Okay.
2 years.
Okay, 2 years. I was about right on what I thought.
Yes.
And you do a lot of whole animal.
Yes.
How is that part? Are people responding to that?
In terms of whole animal to restaurants or whole animal to people?
Both.
Both. Whole animal to restaurants sounds really good, but it's hard. And I think a lot of restaurants struggle with that because to get the same piece of meat, you know, 20 or 30 times is not necessarily possible when
sure.
buying a whole carcass.
Sure.
I think there are a lot of restaurants that are trying to do that. Mm-hmm. In terms of our retail and ability to sell direct to consumer, that's what we do. We uh-huh. buy whole animals, we butcher them down, and we put it out in the case, and it moves.
So people are responding to the less familiar standard cuts. They're going for tongue and kidney and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the... Definitely people are going for the tongue and kidney, but it's interesting. There's only one tongue in a lamb.
Exactly.
There's two
legs. In anything.
Yeah, in most things, yes. So I feel like those items aren't really the hard parts to sell. It's moving through the lamb breasts or the legs
oh.
after Easter or
oh.
things like that that,
uh-huh.
that are not hard, but we have to come up with creative ways to move mm-hmm. them.
I mean, there's nothing like leg of lamb. I mean, there's so much you can do with it.
I know. You should come down and get some.
I have. And I was just there not long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I got some pork cut for ossobuco.
Oh, yes.
You know, which is just wonderful.
Delicious, yes.
No, I'm a regular customer.
I know. I have to give you a hard time. No, fortunately, we have a wonderful staff in the retail, and they're mm-hmm. phenomenal at coming up with new ways in order to market the wonderful products that all the farmers provide for mm-hmm. us, as well as educate people in ways of cooking that kind of make it more user-friendly. So
sure.
there's ossobuco. Not everybody knows how to deal with that, or how to cook that.
I will teach them.
Oh, perfect.
And another thing that you have, and I've actually photographed it quite a lot and used it in one of my books, and I have a copy of the book in my car for you.
Oh, wow. Thank
is
you.
The call fat.
Yes.
And it was really interesting because two things happened, probably more than two things, but at least two things happened simultaneously when I was writing my book about meatballs, which is called More Than Meatballs. And I was looking for something that made sense to wrap meatballs or coat meatballs that contributed to the taste, but also to the integrity of that ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to have it round. You didn't want it falling apart. But did you really need to add flour, egg, and breadcrumbs? And suddenly you and Thistle Meats had call fat available.
Mm-hmm.
And I had first come across call fat when I was teaching at a Santa Rosa Junior College. And they had gotten roadkill, literally. They had gotten a deer. And Michael Selinger had made Not Kayet, the other one.
Crepinette. Yeah.
He had made crepinette out of ground venison, and he said, you should try some, Michelle. And so I'm prepping for class. I am embarrassed. I don't remember how many I ate. It was so good, and it was just ground venison wrapped in caul fat. Mm. And at that point, you pretty much had to buy either 25 pounds or 50 pounds from somewhere like and that would last you a lifetime.
Yes.
And then suddenly there you were, and Thistle Meat selling it 3 ounces, 6 ounces, a pound. Mm-hmm. And that made it available to the consumer. And you're part of the larger new butchery movement, mm-hmm. which is really taking place, not necessarily everywhere in the country, but certainly in urban areas, Brooklyn, New York, and all kinds of places. And suddenly I could photograph that, show people how to wrap meatballs, and, you know, tell them they, you know, they could spend $3 and wrap 300 meatballs. And it was a revelation. But then at the same time that was happening, my very first book editor, John Harris, who had written a book called Mythology and Meatballs back in the late 70s or early 80s, and he was writing an introduction for the book that goes back to the first recorded recipes when mixtures for meatballs were called minces, and they were all wrapped in caul fat.
Hmm.
So I sort of just intuitively, and thanks to you, went back to that earliest recipe.
Oh, no kidding.
And so I have all these photographs of your caul fat and my meatballs. So I want to give you a copy of that. And maybe you'll want to offer those photographs to customers. Because it doesn't work just for meatballs. It's also fabulous for meatloaf.
Caul fat is a wonderful item. You can use it for, you can wrap roast in it. If you don't want to lard something, if you want to coat it and then have it be held and then roast it in the oven, say you want to cover something in bacon. But if you put something with the bacon isn't perfectly thin, you put it in the oven on a fairly high heat, the bacon's going to shrivel up.
It's going to shrink.
Yeah, and get crispy, which is lovely, but maybe not the desired effect. If you wrap it in caul fat, you're sorted. You can put bay leaves. One thing that we really enjoy is to take a fig leaf. Now is a great time for
it.
And lamb or goat on the inside, like a crepinette, but then put the fig leaf around it and then wrap that in caul fat.
What a great idea.
It's really, really delicious. And it kind of adds, the figs tend to, especially now because they're green and really fresh, it adds like almost a slight tannic flavor that's just really beautiful when it comes to lamb and goat as well.
And do you always have the caul fat available?
Yeah, I would 99.9% of the time.
Exactly, that's what I thought. And I buy a pound at a time and I break it up and I put it in my freezer and I can make meatballs the drop of a hat. And on that note, we're going to take a real quick break here so I can gather myself up on a mouthful.
For my darling, I told him she left here long ago. He wondered if I knew where she headed. I told him everything I know. Greener pasture is where she can be found. My baby was back. My calloused hands tell the story of the hard life and hard times I have seen. When all around had fields of plenty, the seeds that I sowed came up lean. Is where she can be found. Green pasture is where my baby was bound. love. I promised her she'd never be unhappy. Well, I guess sometimes a promise ain't enough. Now green pasture is where she can be found. Green pasture is where my baby was bound. Is where my baby was bound.
It is Mouthful. Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming with Michelle Anna Jordan. I am here live in the studio, skidding in with Rex Williams of Williams Ranches and Ryan Rinn of Sonoma County Meat Company, two people I've wanted to have in the same room for a very long time, and two of the really great assets of Sonoma County. I have been told in recent months, and I won't say by whom, but I've been told, Michelle, we know you care about local ingredients, but we don't. And other things like that. And I find it so astonishing. This is one of the most fertile regions in the entire world for growing and raising anything. And, you know, somebody's today at the event I was at earlier had these actually really nice bags of ice. And it was nice, clear ice, the kind you would want to put in a drink. And they named a chain grocery store where you could get it. And I thought, oh my God, I haven't been there in 20 years. And it's because I'm always attempting fairly successfully to give my money to locally owned restaurants, locally owned markets. First through farmers markets. That's my first point of shopping is weekly farmers markets, and then locally owned markets, individual markets like Sonoma County Meat Company, farm stands, and sort of the last resort is a locally owned supermarket. And their statistics, some of them come from the Sonoma County the Sonoma County Board of Economic Opportunity, I think it is. There's statistics about how if you spend your money on businesses that are based locally, what that does for your community is astonishing. Rather than spending that money at a regional chain or a national chain, and so much of that money goes out of the county, and it doesn't benefit your friends and neighbors in the way that spending your money locally does. And we're really at a crossroads. We're becoming, in part, a playground for the rich. We see that happening, especially right now with Healdsburg. But we're also a farming and ranching community, and that's why I'm here. You know, that's why I've wanted to be here my whole life. And that's why I want people like Rex Williams and Ryan Rinn on Mouthful. So one of the things I wanted to ask, Ryan, you do value-added products in mm-hmm. addition to just the cuts of meat. Mm-hmm. Currently, Joey and Lark, who you can see, are eating some food that you were selling at the West End Farmers Market last Sunday, where I was doing a book signing. Uh-huh. And I bought whatever pet food you had because we had a busy week, and so I wasn't making it myself. Uh-huh. So you're making local foods mm-hmm. for animals, and a raw diet is a fantastically healthy diet for your dogs. You're also doing sausages, a variety of sausages, yes. including, other than mine, the best merguez I've had. And I'm wondering how close our recipes are.
Well, I have seen your recipe before.
Yes, because I was having Willowside Meats
make it. Yes,
do
I've
it.
Seen that. Yeah.
And I bought some of yours a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's like, wow, this tastes a lot like mine.
It's very similar. I use a little more harissa and a little more cumin.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what I like to do.
Yeah, but it has, number one, it has cilantro in it.
Yeah.
And it has a tanginess that I really like. Some people do merguez with a sweet element.
Yeah.
They add cinnamon, and sometimes they add ground dried apricot. And I don't like that so much. Mm-hmm. I like the kind you're making.
Yeah, we tried that version when we were developing the recipe, and it just didn't really speak to me of the region.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to southern Spain, haven't been to North Africa, but spent a good amount of time there. And it seems like a more herbaceous area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hot. You know, there's not, the vegetation is, you know, kind of not sparse, but, you know, has to work really hard. And so whenever you have a hot environment, you know, kind of more of a spicy.
The spices help cool you off.
Yeah, help cool you off.
Cilantro is a cooling herb.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, other than my own, I love your cilantro.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't make my own that much, so now I'm buying yours. You also do a fabulous chorizo.
So that chorizo recipe is really close to Jeanine and I's heart, actually. We spent some time last year, 3 or 4 years ago, actually. It felt like last year. But making jamons and curing meat in Andalusia, Spain.
Oh, you did?
Yes. And that recipe I stole directly from a mm-hmm. little teeny butcher shop that we lived and worked at for 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
massaging hams and making cured chorizo.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wish I could say I created it, but it's directly from Blasquez, Spain.
Well, it's fabulous.
It's really lovely. Not hot at all.
No,
paprika.
No, there's some chorizo is hot, but there's so many different kinds. I know that Franco Dunn of One World Sausages, he makes different chorizos from all over the planet.
Yeah,
some are spicy, some are not. Some are fresh, some are not.
Yeah,
but yours rock. All of Franco's rock. Yours also rocks.
Oh, wonderful!
And are you using Williams Ranch's lamb or several lambs? Do you get lamb from other people?
I don't. I only buy the best,
okay,
which is from Rex.
That's
pretty clear. You've had it.
It's the best lamb. I mean, it's extraordinary lamb. It's truly the tenderness, the sweetness, the range of flavors. It's really extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, it's not by accident. My lovely wife doesn't make it into the house usually, you know, before 7 o'clock at night.
I know Carrie works.
Actually,
so
she
hard.
Is in the truck right now, taking lambs over to be processed. So.
And where do they go?
They go over to Superior Farms in Dixon.
Okay, so do they go over there? They're processed. They're harvested.
They're processed,
and then they come back to you.
Mm-hmm.
And because I've had people ask me, they say, "Well, geez, we have slaughterhouses here in the county, and what we get at over at Superior Farms is we have one-stop shopping. We have a USDA inspected line, just like they have over here. Those lambs are walk off the truck on Monday. They're processed Monday morning. They are chilled on Tuesday and Wednesday at, oh my God, 30.
Yep.
They show up at Ryan's.
5:30.
And it's just, it's bingada bangada boomada. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. And it's, we're not, in my mind, using up that many resources to come up with a quality product,
mm-hmm.
Doing it that way. We used to use Panazeras out in Occidental. And oh my word, Tommy makes the best lambs. He can take lambs that they come in, and when he processes them, they are Jim Dandy.
And that's where Bruce Campbell works.
That's where Bruce used to, and we used to break lambs out there. I think I went into it just a little bit before you got in here, is that I was working with Bruce Campbell. I used to work with Bruce for 15 years when we first got into this thing, and I learned an awful lot from him. When Bruce started breaking lambs down into retail cuts, we were breaking lambs in the little room out there at Panazeras, and that's where I learned how to take lambs apart.
One of the reasons I know about that is if I wanted lamb's tongue, I had to go out there at about between 10 and 11 in the morning, and I would get a big bag of lamb's tongue that were still warm.
Yeah. That's coffee break time.
Okay.
We would show up at about 4:30, quarter to 5, and pre-ready the room. Then the inspector would come in, and he would give it his blessing, and then we'd start breaking lambs, and we'd break lambs like madmen until 10 o'clock. Mm. And then we'd stop and have our coffee and come out and walk around a little bit, and then we went back in and packaged everything up, mm-hmm. and then got it in the truck. Kind of a funny story about working with Uncle Bruce is he had a pickup with a slide-in refrigerator box in it, and that's how we delivered all the lambs. Mm-hmm. And on Tuesday nights, we would go and load all the lambs in the truck. And this is 40 or 50 lamb carcasses, plus all the retail cuts that we had to go to, mm-hmm. restaurants and things. And then I would take that truck home. I would leave my house at 4 in the morning. I would be across the bridge into San Francisco at about 5:30. I would go my loop all the way around down to San Jose, back up 880 through Berkeley, make my drop, come back. He would jump in the truck, kind of a Pony Express kind of thing. Mm-hmm. He would jump in the truck, go back out to the plant, load another 40 lambs in the truck, and then hit all of the local markets here, mm-hmm. and ending with Big John's up in Healdsburg. Mm-hmm. And then he would go back. And we were doing an auction one night, and this lady comes up and she says, oh, I see those CK lamb trucks everywhere.
And Bruce, and it was one truck.
And Bruce and I kind of looked at each other, and says, we've only got one truck. And she says, no, I saw it in Berkeley one day, and then I was driving up, and I saw another one in Healdsburg. And I'm like, no, that was the same truck. 150,000 miles in 3 years, and then we traded them off.
Wow. Yeah.
We wore them out.
And we lost Bruce
2 years ago.
It's been 2 years already? Yeah.
December 1st, 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was really sad. We all really miss Bruce. Forget what I was going to ask you. I was going to ask you. I got sort of sidetracked.
I went on
Bruce.
A story.
Oh, I know. I know what I was going to ask is you also milk some of your sheep.
Yes, we do. We have a sheep dairy. Or a would-be sorry sheep dairy if you... It is, the learning curve's been pretty steep on that. Now, Carrie and I have been in the lamb business as a matter of fact, against everyone's advice, we went ahead and we did it. We bought sheep together out of wedlock. And so we've been in the sheep business before we were married, and we've been married for 23 years. And, we've always wanted to be in the sheep business. It's just something that we clicked. We clicked on that. And about 5 years ago, we thought, you know, maybe this will be a way to augment some income with these sheep.
What were you doing at that time? What was your income at that point?
Our income? Well, I'm, you know, I've maintenance supervisor for St. Francis Winery. I've worked there for 18 years.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Which is how I finance my farming habit.
Oh.
And actually at that point, Carrie was the executive director of the Sodiome Resource Conservation District in Santa Rosa. So we both had off-farm jobs, and we both were running sheep. And then when she started the dairy, we were able to generate enough income that she gave up her town job. Mm. And so she's running the dairy and running them. Now, there's two different flocks of sheep. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with how this works, it's just like cows. We have Holstein cows and Hereford cows. Mm-hmm. Holsteins bring the milk. Herefords bring the steaks. We have East Frisian Lacon ewes that are our milking ewes. And we have Dorset ewes that make the meat sheep, or make the lamb that, mm-hmm. that we sell to Ryan. So it's grown to, we're milking about 100 ewes.
Mm-hmm. And do they have to be milked twice a day?
Just like cows, just like twice cows. A day, except five and five.
But they don't give as much.
No.
They give a fraction of what cows give.
Oh, absolutely. If we have a ewe that will maintain between a 4 and 6 pound average over the course of a 200-day lactation, mm-hmm. we do the fat boy happy dance. because, you know, the economic threshold is really in the neighborhood of like 2 to 2.3 pounds per day. Mm-hmm. And once they drop below that, we've still got the same hard cost to milk them. And so once they drop below that 2.3 pounds per day, mm-hmm. we're pouring money on the ground.
Yeah. Just to interrupt, a gallon weighs about 8 pounds.
Okay.
Just so you keep that in mind.
Yeah, so that's about what milk, but. So it takes like
it's
about 2 quarts a day.
Yeah, 8.65 to be exact. And so we're looking, you know, we want at least a quart, basically, mm-hmm. Because, you know, they've got to have their grain when they come in the barn, and mm-hmm. they've got to have their alfalfa, and of course the guy that's feeding them and the people that are milking them, they like to get paid every now and again.
Sure.
So, anyway, it's been a real learning experience for mm-hmm. us, because there is so much labor involved. We had no idea about the labor involved when we started this, because we'd been running range sheep. You know, you lamb them through a barn, you take the lambs, give them all their vaccinations, and you pat them on the head and turn them out on green grass. And you bring them in from time to time and address the parasite issues and trim their feet and keep them happy. And then you bring them in and sort them off and send them to processing. Mm-hmm. It's an oversimplification, but that's what we were used to doing. And then mm-hmm. when we got these dairy sheep, holy cow, 24/7.
Yeah.
And and like I said, we milk them for 200 days. Mm-hmm. And then
where does the milk go?
We have a contract with, we sell some to Bellwether Farms.
Oh, you do? Okay.
And then we sell some to Bleeding Heart
Cheese
Company.
Bleeding Heart, okay. Yeah. That was the one I knew about. Yeah, was Bleeding
that's
Hearts.
Where the cheese is getting made in the mm-hmm. In Bellwether. I don't know what they do with
it. Well, Bellwether does their sheep milk yogurt, which is fabulous yogurt. And then they do, I think, 3 sheep milk cheeses. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's the new Haverton Hill.
Yes.
Which does, have you all had the sheep butter?
No, I haven't had the sheep butter, had the ice cream.
I think I've had the ice cream, but I don't care about the ice cream as much as I care about the butter. The sheep butter is so good. It's not cheap. But I think it's like $11 or $12 for 8 ounces. But it is just so delicious.
Well, and that is the whole deal behind sheep milk, is it's very high in fat.
Right.
I mean, you get a Jersey cow, and she's going to be 5% butter fat, and you've got a sheep, and it's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, when you're making cheese out of it, you get a better yield. When mm-hmm. you're making butter out of it, you get a better yield. And so, mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've ever had straight sheep's milk.
I haven't,
but
the Haverton Hill is selling it.
Right,
but they've got it in
a bottle.
It.
Yeah, it tastes like the sweetest, most wonderful half and half you've ever had mm-hmm. in your life. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a shame to put it in the coffee. But not that much.
I was working in Europe, and I used to steal it out of the cooler all the time. I wasn't getting mm-hmm. paid, so I was like, I'm drinking sheep milk because it is good.
Now, there's somebody in Grayton who is doing a cow share.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's doing a cow share. She has Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just one. It's a Jersey cow, and she's feeding it a 100% organic, no soy feed.
Mm-hmm.
And she's selling it in half gallons for, I think, $10 or $12 a half gallon. It is so... I haven't drunk milk in, 30 or 40 years. This milk is so good, and I imagine that sheep's milk is sort of beyond that. So I'm looking forward to trying that, yes.
I recommend
yes. it. Yes. I want to go back to Sonoma County Meat Company a bit, because mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit more about all of your products. We've really focused on sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know, I think people know in general, that we raise sheep. We raise lamb in Sonoma County. I mean, mm-hmm. you drive anywhere and you see them. Where are you getting things like beef, pork? Beef, pork, goat.
Mm-hmm.
And what else?
Well, the goat we're getting from Sonoma Hills Ranch for the next few weeks, and then after that, Rex will be providing us with goat.
You're gonna do goat?
thank you, Ryan.
You're welcome.
as I was explaining to Ryan earlier, well, I said I like to feed out goats. Let's just put it this way. Carrie and I know how to feed out goats. My son actually had a meat goat project when he was in 4-H.
Okay.
And those are the goats that we used to sell at the farmers markets when we would sell the kids. And Ryan called me a while ago and said, I don't know what I'm going to do for goats.
Yes.
And of course, because of the network of friends I got, finding a trailer load of feeder goats was about a 2-phone call deal.
And what do you mean by feeder goat?
Okay, these are kids that have been weaned off of mama.
And a kid means a young goat.
Yeah, that's that. Yeah.
Anything, it's not a small child.
Anything under a year, I guess.
Okay.
But so these kids have been weaned off the does, and then they usually go out on pasture. And then once they come, they get sized up, framed up on the pasture, then they'll bring them in and they'll finish them off with alfalfa or something like that. A goat is an entirely different critter, and I know this sounds pretty obvious, but it's an entirely different critter than sheep. Whereas sheep will run on grass and develop a very nice layer of cover with fat or condition a little. When we process our lambs, we want 0.2 inches of fat at the 13th rib, and I handle every lamb process.
So, okay, 0.2 inches of fat at the 13th rib.
Right, which is right where the loin starts. It's where the rack quits and the loin starts.
You know, I wrote about that.
Did you?
In a column in the Press Democrat, and I got really nasty letters.
Really?
Yeah, sure. There's the people who don't want to think about eating animals.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about
You're just supposed
layer.
To go to the store and buy your meat there.
Yeah. Or, you know, or be a vegan. But I got to, but I wrote, and I talked about the moment of harvest and how Bruce Campbell taught you about feeling and that sort of thing. Yeah, they got kind of nasty.
And it is. But it's something we do, and it's how we can get consistently the same lamb over and over and over and over again. And I in the winter time, I go into Ryan and I got my hat in my hand and it's like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. These don't look as good. And da-da-da-da-da. And he looks at him and says, ah, they're wonderful.
Yeah, they're fine.
And, but I'm splitting hairs. And, you know, I have processed, I did the math, at well over 100,000 lambs. And with Bruce and Carrie and I. And so I've handled each one of those. And I've handled those lambs alive, and then I see them on the hook. And then and when we were working with Bruce, I was actually the guy that was taking them apart and breaking them down at a retail cut. So I know what it feels like with the wool on it, and I know what it should look like, what I'm wanting it to look like when we're processing it. So and that's a rarity. I've always said that in order to do a good job selecting lambs, you've got to spend a lot of time in a cold box with a knife in your hand. We have a lot of people in academia that don't agree with me.
Really?
So, well, it's really important because the margins are so slim that any time there's extra fat or not enough fat, usually it's extra fat. You lose your margin right there. You trim it off. The consumer doesn't want to eat a big hunk of fat on the outside of their of their chop. You know, some people do, but not necessarily. Right. And it's not appealing in the case. So it's really, really important. That's one thing that's great about dealing with Rex is that it's always. I mean, he'll say, "Oh, it's a little thin or it's a little thick." With what I'm used to dealing on the and then seeing in the open market, it's perfect every time. You know, and the fact that he considers that is, you know, music to my ears.
Now, do you have a lot of options when it comes to goat? Because
no,
because one of the things we have here is a huge goat cheese industry. And so I would think that if we have a lot of milking goats, what is it? Is it close to 50-50 when they're born? You know, half of them are female, half of them are male.
Oh, they're
the
not
males
the same
don't
goat.
Give milk.
I was going to say, you want to handle
yeah,
this
yeah,
one?
Yeah, they're not the same
oh,
goat.
Oh, they're not the same. Okay, so what happens for the milk goats? What happens to all of the males?
They go away somewhere else. They don't get, I mean, people can use them as like roasters, or they go to, you know, different ethnic communities.
Okay, but it's not the same. Oh.
No, not the same goat.
Okay.
Different breed, 100%.
Okay.
You know, it takes a different time frame to raise. I mean, you know.
It's not unlike the milking sheep and the meat sheep.
Okay.
We have milking goats and we have meat goats. These are boar goats. They originate in South Africa. They've got big tops in them. They've got a different shape to their muscle.
Uh-huh.
It would be the difference between, I can't even think of somebody that skinny, and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, they're not designed for it. You know, a milk goat is designed to have nice udders, good conformation, and make milk. That's its job. A meat goat is designed to be strong and be square across the shoulders and many other things.
Okay. And how are you finding customers? Are they?
I love goat. It's amazing.
I love it. I love it myself. And are you finding an increasing market for it?
It's a slow go.
It makes, in my opinion, it makes the best picadillo.
Oh, okay.
I've been making picadillo for the last couple of... I love picadillo. And I'll use pork, beef, lamb. Hmm. The very best picadillo, I think, is goat.
I agree
with
you.
It's just fabulous.
Delicious.
And roasting whole goats is also really...
Definitely a good way to use up the small dairy guys, for
right.
sure.
So one of the things you offer, other than just walking in and taking your cuts... Mm-hmm. and knowing to ask about pet food, that sort of thing. And I have to say, your pet food is really well-priced.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of our goal, is to provide a reasonable price product.
You are doing that, and you have a lot of smoked goods.
Mm-hmm. We have bacon, some smoked sausages in the retail only. Mm-hmm. We provide,
we have smoked snout.
Yes, we have.
My dogs really enjoy. But are you doing a meat CSA?
We are doing a meat CSA. In fact, as I left the house this afternoon, Janine, my partner, said, make sure to talk about the meat CSA.
Right on. There you go, Janine. So Janine is your partner
My business partner. And inside and outside the business.
Okay.
So we like to spend a lot of time together.
Great.
So we have a meat CSA that offers beef, lamb, and pork. It's an amazing price. You sign up online. You get it once a month. We have a 5, 10, and 15-pound option.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in any kind of cost savings and definitely supporting local farmers, that is the way to go.
Yeah,
do it. It's amazing. Yeah. We've revamped it. We've done a couple of changes. Mm-hmm. We're considering putting value-added stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Janine is working behind the CSA like crazy. So we'll be in a few weeks releasing a couple of tiers to try and make it a more marketable and user-friendly.
Yeah. I did a meat CSA for a while, and one of the things I found out was I don't eat as much meat as I thought I did. Mm-hmm. I was doing either 5 or 10 pounds every 2 weeks. No way. No way. And I cut down to 5 pounds once a month. I may try yours. What about poultry? You're not doing any poultry right now, are you?
We are in the process of contracting with a woman to raise poultry specifically for Sonoma County Meat Company. They will be a pastured 8-week bird.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be organic as well, but it's a local farmer as well, and we're going to contract with her. And this is for chicken, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Just for chicken. Trying to come up with a low cost option for our retail and some of our wholesale accounts as well.
Here's something I wish you would do.
Okay.
Talk to the Petrakowskis, who I believe still live on Skillman Lane, and I believe Richard Caggiano is doing his sausages and hams at what was their poultry processing plant. They did the most outrageous smoked duck. It was unlike, they brined it in such a way, and it really transformed the texture. But the other thing, and I would buy like 20 at a time and take all the duck off and then make the most delicious stock from these smoked duck carcasses, and then use that the stock to make cassoulet.
Ah, yes.
With smoked duck stock, and nobody has filled that niche. That is a niche. And their smoked chicken was good as well, but their smoked duck was off the charts. And I think that they just stopped.
Doing USDA poultry value-added products is very exciting in terms of regulation.
Okay. So, I've heard that. Yes, I've
heard
that.
So I will put it on the list of things that I'd like to do that maybe not won't happen right away. However,
but somebody needs to get that technique from them before they
stop go making on. Available.
Right. Yes, before they go on, because it really was. It was a very, no one in the country did it. No one in the world did anything quite like that. Mm-hmm. It had a remarkable texture, but man, the stock that made, it was just sensational. And on that note, we are almost out of time.
Okay.
So I want to tell people, if you want Williams Ranch's lamb or goat.
For a limited engagement only.
I'm sorry.
You need to talk to Sonoma County Meat Company. They have a great website. You can call. You can make special. If you're having a big event, you can make special orders, or you can just go in and you can get it. Or if you want a leg of lamb for, I know you did a lot of extra legs for Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Very popular and very delicious. Are you open 6 days a week or seven?
Six.
Tuesday, close Sunday.
Yes. We're Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 6.
Okay. So not Monday?
No Monday.
So 5 days a week.
Tuesday through Saturday, 5 days a week.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
But the plant itself is open six.
I'm there
6 days a week.
Right.
So Tuesday through Saturday.
Okay.
The retail is open.
What is that? 35?
35 Sebastopol Avenue.
Sebastopol Road.
Apparently when you go over the railroad tracks.
Yes, Sebastopol Road. When you go over the railroad tracks, because I searched for you on Avenue and it wasn't there. Yeah. And on that note, thanks for listening. Meet me back here next week for another episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, farming, and ranching. Thanks very much to my guest this evening.